Chapter 49. Locked. Muscles and tendons bunch and tighten as I watch the Ni Da Maji Ting emerge. I could cover the distance between us in seconds, and my body screams at me to attack. But I know she will be ready for it. Even if she cannot activate my armlet in sunlight, I do not know if I am up to the task of fighting one of Father's Dharma Ting wives, legendary for their precise strike school of Sharusak.
Don't look so surprised, Belina says. One of the first things the dice told me when I took the veil was that I would need to stand by the Sharum fountain in the great harem of Sharik Hora on the 10th waning of the year of Evaram 3800. It took more than 40 years for me to understand why, but I never doubted the path Evaram set for me. I am wary of dice. I wish I had a spear to put through the witch's heart and have done. I am not your enemy. Belina takes a step forward, and unconsciously, I take a step back. Selin has her fists raised, but Rojvar and Mika know Dharma Ting better. Both look ready to get to their knees or flee. You are no longer safe in Desert Spear. Belina takes another step. This time, I hold my ground. That implies there was a time I was. There was a time when you were not a liability to Eleveron. Belina is nose to nose with me now. My hand shakes as I try to keep from bawling a fist. But he fears your influence on his grandson. He sent Chikka to end it. The admission isn't really a surprise, but hearing it aloud makes it real in a way it wasn't before. The Damaji tried to have me killed, even after I pledged my life to him. But the prophecy, I say, he needs me. Krasia needs me. To bleed, Belina says. Charvis believes the prophecy can only be fulfilled with your death. That is the precondition to turning the eye of Alagaikar away from Desert Spear. My blood turns to ice at the thought, but I keep my voice calm. What do you believe? That it is like blood for the dice, Belina says. You must choose to bleed willingly, or the prophecy will be corrupted. I turn to present the armlet to her. Then free me. Let me choose. Belina smiles. No doubt Mika chose this spot because it is close to one of the hidden exits of the harem. Go. When Charvis comes to demand the sympathy bones linked to your shackles, I will provide false ones. She and Eleveron will not be able to find you or strike at you from afar. But you will, I growl. One way or another, the prophecy must be fulfilled, Belina says. I do not wish your death, but if you attempt to leave Desert Spear before the storms pass, you will do it without limbs. Suddenly, Mika lunges past me, already spinning into a kick that cracks across Belina's face. She does not scream, but a jolt runs through her at what must be blinding pain. Blood soaks her black veil as the Ni Da Maji Ting stumbles back. Mika follows, pressing her thumbs into the bloody cloth. But Belina recovers quickly. She seems to float away from Mika's next blow, coming back in to drive stiffened knuckles into my sister's midsection, seeking the precise point where her lines of energy converge. A precise strike to such a spot could paralyze or even kill. But Mika is wise to the move, twisting her body to protect the convergence even as she accepts the blow. Then she tumbles away, pressing her thumbs to the bloodlocks on her anklets. The red stones
turn milky white again, and the shackles open with an audible click. Well done. Belina removes her veil and wipes the remaining blood from her face. It seems the fabled Sharum Ting of the Damaja live up to their reputation. She carefully folds the veil and tucks it into her Hora pouch. I won't underestimate you again. Mika pulls off the anklets, dropping them to the ground with a clatter as she stalks in. You can cast no spells here in the sunlight, Dharma Ting. Belina frowns, taking a fighting stance. I do not need them, insolent girl. No doubt you impress the Kaji Sharum, but you are no match for the Maja Sharu Sark. And even in sunlight, I can draw strength from my Hora. I know she's right. Any Hora jewelry next to her skin can be drawn upon to make her as strong as I am, or as fast as Darren. Mika knows this, but it does not slow her approach. It won't help you. When they come together, I see Belina was not lying. Her limbs are a blur as she attacks and defends, but once Mika attacks, she does not let up. Each move flows into the next, and for a few moments, they appear to be at an impasse. But Mika is learning her foe, adapting. Soon she begins to pick apart Belina's defenses, striking convergences that make the Dharma Ting grunt with pain, even as her limbs buckle and lose strength. Belina recovers quickly, no doubt drawing on the power of her Hora. But that power is finite in the sunlight. I see worry begin to work its way through the Dharma Ting serenity of her expression, and then fear. No doubt she is wondering how long she can keep this up. Not long enough, it seems. When their circling puts her back to the opening in the hedge maze, she whips out her Hanzar, and blood arcs into the air. Mika skitters back in surprise, clutching a bloody forearm. Before she can recover, Belina turns and flees. Do not let her escape, Mika cries. Selin and I lunge for Belina, but she's using the last of her stored magic, moving in a blur of white silk too fast to follow. Before we can close the distance, the hedges close behind her. I glance at the hedge maze, but even if I knew it well, I doubt we'd be able to catch her before she can reach a safe space with guards to defend her. What do we do now? I ask. Mika's eyes are hard as she binds the cut on her arm. What she wants, for now. She leads us down a series of twisting paths through the hedge maze. Twice we squeeze through all but invisible gaps in the hedges until we come to a statue that abuts the harem wall. Mika twists a ward on its base and slides open a hidden door. Quickly, we need to get to the Mirror of Heroes. I hurry through, coming out into a quiet hall that seems seldom used. I see why, as it dead ends at a mirror framed in human skulls that will peer back at any who dare stop to admire their reflection. It's a perfect place for a hidden passage. Even in Sharik Hora, few would have the courage to submit themselves to the judgment of the spirits of heroes past. But it seems Chadan is one of them. My prince stands in front of the Mirror of Heroes, as if seeking history's judgment. My heart aches at the sight of him. Chadan turns with a start when he realizes he is no longer alone. He takes in the sight of four women in colored silk and rushes our way. Are you women all right? There is genuine concern in his voice. I can tell he doesn't recognize me in pillow silks. And why should he? What are you doing outside the harem? Has something happened? Another man might avert his gaze when encountering four women out of their blacks, but Chadan is not interested in women, and barely gives our clothes and bodies a glance. He focuses instead on our eyes, and when his meet mine, I freeze as they widen in recognition. Now he looks at my body. His eyes narrow as he inspects me up and down, then
then seizes my arms in their gauzy silk sleeves.
Olive?
I sense Mika take a step forward. She attacked Belina without warning, but I cannot allow that here. I switch to the silent hand language she had begun teaching me and Selen, making a quick gesture. Hold. Chadan throws his arms around me, hugging me close.
I've been so worried. Drillmaster Chika has been murdered, and there were signs of struggle in your room. We've had people looking everywhere.
He steps back, eyes running over me once more.
I see it now. It's a wonder I never did before. When I heard you'd gone to the Jiwa Sharum, I thought it was to punish me after our argument. But it wasn't, was it? You went to steal clothes, to sneak into the great harem.
I had to see my family, I say. I had to make sure they were all right.
Of course, Chadan agrees.
But they are safer inside. I shake my head. Nowhere is safe. Chika is dead because your grandfather sent him to kill me.
Impossible, Chadan says. What does grandfather gain by killing you when you have sworn yourself to him? Chika is Iravan's creature.
Ni Damating Belina says otherwise, I say.
Of course.
Chadan sounds ready to spit. The witch would say anything to protect her son. But it makes no sense. If grandfather wanted you dead, he would simply have you arrested. Unless he thought you would resent him for it, I say. Easier to use an assassin and keep his own hands clean.
Wear your words. Chadan's voice hardens. You speak of my grandfather, Damaji Eleveran, direct descendant of Marja himself, who freed us from bondage to your traitorous brother Arsom, and restored Desert Spear to glory. He is not some dishonorable dog, striking quietly in the night. I cross my arms. Except when he sends watchers to kidnap a girl with barely 15 summers from her home while his emissaries are under truce. Forgive me if I do not trust your grandfather's honor.
Chadan has no retort, his face taking on the practiced calm facade I know so well. There are times when I can see past it, but not now.
Put your blacks on, Chadan says at last. We'll go before the Skull Throne with your story.
I'm sure.
Are you?
I cut in.
Are you sure? My life is one thing, but this is my family. What would you do to protect your family?
Anything, Chadan says, and I sense the double edge of the word.
I thought I was family too, I say.
Your Ajin Pal.
Your I want you to be, Chadan says. But I won't defy the throne.
Now put your blacks on so you can stand with dignity while we get to the bottom of this.
The words are the slap I need, a reminder that even my lover is not without prejudice.
I laugh, spreading my arms and giving my hips a shake to rattle the coins around my waist.
What do I care if the Damaji's court sees me like this? It's closer to the real me than the beaten, head-shaven boy you met in Shiraj.
I take a step back. But it doesn't matter, because we're not going before the Skull Throne. We're leaving.
Chadan takes a step forward, mirroring me.
I won't let you.
I glance at Mika. Take the others and go. I'll be along in a moment.
Let me... Mika falls silent as I raise a hand.
Just go, sister.
Chadan puts a hand out as the others move around him to head for the mirror, but the corridor is too wide for him to block completely.
Do not.
I step into his path.
Go.
This time I put the weight of command on the word, and the others obey, moving around my back to head down to the hall.
Olive, you don't have to do this.
There is real emotion in Shadan's voice at last.
Please, do not make me stop you.
There is a tiny crack in his voice, and it almost breaks me. I don't want this any more than he does,
But still, I set my feet in a Charusark stance, even as my Ajinpal does the same. I am not a terrified girl, whipped within an inch of her life and thrown into your place of power this time, brother. What are you then? Chadan's voice has gone flat. My spear brother? Or a pillow dancer, sneaking out of the harem with something that doesn't belong to her? I straighten my back at the cold words. They cut, but at the same time, they make what must come next easier. I am both, my prince. I thought you, of all people, might understand that. Picking one or the other is a false choice, and my friends and I don't belong to anyone. His expression softens as the words sink in. He cares for me still, and I see in his eyes that in a different life, given time and room and liberty, we might have found happiness together. But we have none of those things in this life. Chadan still thinks he can somehow reason with me, but I know my prince well enough to understand he won't just let me go. I throw a quick punch in his moment of hesitation. If Chadan is surprised, it does not show. His speed is almost supernatural, as he reorients in time to bat it aside. He grabs my wrist, using his own force to yank me hard down toward an elbow he puts in line with my throat. I put up my other arm to block the elbow, and Chadan grabs that arm as well. But this time, he has no force to turn against me, and with two points of contact, I am able to set my feet and lift him clear off the ground, driving him into the harem wall with all of my strength. His helmet clangs against the stone, and a ripple runs over his alagai scales as the armor distributes some of the impact. Still, he is momentarily stunned. With the wall at his back to keep him from skittering away, I land heavy punches, ignoring the pain as the sharp scales lacerate my fists. The loose pants of my pillow silks prove ideal for kicks, and I throw a knee between his legs, doubling him over. It hurts me to do it, but the pain buys the necessary time as Mika pulls back the mirror to reveal a hidden passage and my friends escape. Every blow pains me, a betrayal of everything Chadan and I shared. But I can't let up. If I give him even a moment to recover, he's as likely as not to put me on the ground and organize pursuit before Mika and the others get far. I grab one of his arms and the front of his robes, twisting into a throw that will send my prince tumbling down the hall, giving me time to follow the others through the passage. I hope there's a way to lock it from the inside, if only long enough for us to slip away. But Chadan anticipates the throw. Perhaps he even invited it. He quicksteps around me, keeping his feet as I heave, and uses my own strength against me for a throw of his own. It's my turn to have my breath blown out as I slam into a wall, cracking the bones of heroes arranged in a sand ward. Chadan gasps in horror at the sacrilege, and I take the advantage of the distraction to rush back at him with rapid kicks and punches, throwing elbows and knees, searching for an opening to exploit. But Prince Chadan leaves no openings. I fight with the Sharokin we were taught in Sharaj, punches and kicks that combine timing and physics with explosive aggression meant to quickly kill or disable a foe. But Chadan was trained by Dharma, famously secretive about their Sharokin, and it shows in his style. He stands rooted in space, as if some sixth sense is telling him what I will do before I do it. Subtle twists of his back and hips barely slip the path of my blows as he snatches at the limbs to turn their force against me. I throw a punch, and an open hand meets it, sliding the blow aside as his arm seems to coil bonelessly up mine. I try to rotate in the opposite direction, but he is too fast. When he reaches the desired hold, Chadan stiffens his arm, violently locking the joints of my wrist, elbow, and shoulder. He pulls me in, and I have no choice but to allow it, lest he break one of the locked joints. Chardin pivots, spine cracking like a whip as he brings his other arm down in a chop to my neck that will leave me stunned. I twist and curl my free arm in its path, catching the blow on the meat of my arm. The moment his hand retracts, I follow it home with a quick jab at his unprotected face. He avoids the blow, but relinquishes his hold to do so. I step back to create a bit of space, resisting the urge to massage my sore arm. I come back at him, and Chardin lets me do the work, not bothering to punch or kick in return. Instead, he grabs at my punches, trying to lock my wrist and turn them into throws or submission holds. His own wrists are incredibly strong, but I keep a constant motion, flexing my even greater muscles to keep him from getting sufficient leverage. At last, I guide him into position for a powerful spinning kick to the head that I think will end the fight. If it connected. Again, Chardin is ready for the move, catching the foot and throwing his upper body back as his leg comes up, as quick and dexterous as his arm. He snakes his foot around my knee and into the joint of my hip, then whips himself into a spinning leap. My hip screams, and I desperately throw myself in the direction he wants me to go. I hit the floor hard, but it's preferable to a dislocated leg. My hope for a quick victory fades as I get to my feet, but I can still win this. Chardin is weighed down by armor and has no knight strength to sustain him. I'm stronger and won't tire as quickly as he will. The twists and throws he's managed are already distant aches, muffled by adrenaline and focus. They come with no loss of strength. I begin giving ground, keeping my guard in close and offering no free energy for him to use against me. I can sense Chardin's frustration. His fighting is best when he can calmly channel the aggression of his foes against them. Still, he adapts, keeping on the move, trying to box me into the dead end of the hall while offering little free energy of his own. Always rooted, balanced. I back slowly toward the mirror, but it is closed now. The empty eye sockets of ancient heroes bear witness to our fight, but I don't fear their judgment. I'm more afraid that, even if I defeat Chardin, I won't know how to open the passageway. I push the thought away. That is the victor's worry, and there is no guarantee it will be me. We're in a secluded hall, but sooner or later the sounds of our struggle will draw attention. So I fight, throwing kicks and punches to keep him moving, but falling short of giving him force he can redirect. It becomes a waiting game, but slowly it starts to tell. A hiss in his breath, a weakness in his blocks, a slight dip in his guard. Even Alagai scale armor is heavy, as are the thick robes used to keep the steel scales from his skin. The day is hot, and thick charum black doesn't breathe like pillow silks. I move in as if to throw the same probing left punch I've delivered 100 times, but this time I stop midway and deliver a shallow push kick instead. Chardin is already moving to block the punch and reacts too slowly to the kick. The ball of my slippered foot makes solid contact with his thigh just above the knee, forcing the joint to hyperextend. Chardin cries out in pain and stumbles as I drop low and spin a full circuit, sweeping the other leg. Somehow, he regains a measure of control in the fall, writhing like a snake as he whips himself around to grapple. I'm ready and block his attempts to establish a hold that will grant him leverage against my greater strength. We hit the ground with a jolt, and both of us try to turn the rebound against the other, cancelling the energy. We roll around on the floor, grunting and straining, but muscle to muscle, Chardin is no match for me. His bones creak under the grip of my powerful fingers as I force my way into a submission hold. For the first time during the fight, I see fear in his eyes as he realizes he cannot stop me. For some reason, that look hurts most of all. This is a lesson Chardin needed to learn. but I hate being the one to teach it. Slowly, carefully, I cross the ends of his collar and pull, cutting off the flow of blood to his brain. Chadan kicks and thrashes, but my legs are wrapped around his from behind, preventing him from reaching me or rising to his feet. He throws punches over his shoulder to rain upon my unprotected head, but they are awkward and lack the force to dislodge me as I slowly increase the pressure.
Will you kill me?
Chadan gasps as his face reddens and swells.
Like you did Chika.
The question falls as heavily as any blow, and for an instant, my grip loses strength. The opportunity is all Chadan needs to break the hold, pulling in a choked breath as he scrambles away. I can tell from the clumsy, frenetic way he moves that this is the last of his strength, a desperate attempt to create space between us while he gasps and coughs and attempts to recover. I don't give him the chance, grabbing his ankle and pulling hard. He catches himself with his arms before hitting his face on the floor, but it leaves a gap at the back of his helmet and no way to block as I punch him solidly in the head. Chadan goes down hard, the floor striking a second blow against his forehead as the helm clangs against the stone. Still, his shaking hands move to push him up. I grab one arm, twisting it behind him into a submission hold as I pull the scarf from my shoulders. I catch his wrist in a twist of the silk, using it to keep control as I loop the scarf around his opposite elbow and yank his arms together, binding them with another twist. Able to control both of his arms with the silk in one fist, I capture his legs in turn until I've bound all four limbs together. Chadan groans, dazed and breathless, but he doesn't have the strength to stop me. I'm sorry, brother. Tears threaten to blur my vision as I pull off my veil, twisting it into a gag. Chika attacked me in my quarters. If I had not killed him, he surely would have killed me. You would have done the same. Then why did you run? Chadan gasps. Why didn't you come to me? Because you put your family first, I tell him, and so must I. Your brothers are family too, Chadan says. Will you abandon us tonight, when waning comes? The words cut deep, because I know he's right. The demons are hunting me and Darren. Last moon they did nothing, as if they sensed his approach. Now, with both of us in the city, the Alagai will strike, killing Everarm knows how many, while Darren and I hide in the catacombs. But that is only part of the story. Marja abandoned me first, I say. Never once has your grandfather dealt with me in good faith, and you've done nothing to stop it. I lay a gentle hand on his cheek, feeling my own face screw up in anguish. I'm sorry, my prince. I wish there was another way. You won't get away, he groans. I put the veil around his face, forcing the twisted silk between his teeth. I shouldn't say anything. I should just go. But the words are coming and there's no stopping them. You could have cried for help at any time, but you didn't. Chadan turns to look me in the eye. His face so expressionless, it would do a Dharma Ting proud, leaving me to see only myself reflected in his eyes. Like Sharusak, he offers me nothing, turning my own attack against me. It's more than I can bear, and I break the stare. Without looking back, I move quickly to the mirror, but it, too, judges. Like Chadan, I see only myself reflected in the silvered glass, facing the empty stare of heroes' skulls. I'm forced to meet their gaze as I search for something that might trigger the mechanism to open it. I needn't have bothered. The mirror opens as I approach, and I see the glass is transparent on the other side, allowing those within to observe the hall and ensure it is empty before exiting. Mika stands there alone, waiting. I guided the others to a lower level and returned for you, sister. How much did you see? I ask. Enough, Mika says. You could have intervened, I say, thankful she did not. Mika's eyes crinkle as she smiles behind her veil. You don't need saving anymore, brother. Brother. It is what Chadan and the others call me, and it feels right. But here, with Mika, it doesn't. Is that what I am to her? Should I have to choose? I take her hand as the mirror clicks shut behind us. Whatever I am to others, we will always be sisters. Mika squeezes my hand, and I see her eyes are wet. My hand itches for the tiny, tinkling tear bottles that hang at my waist. But Mika surprises me, wiping away the precious tears with the cuff of her sleeve. There will be time for tears later. Come, sister. The Sharumting passage narrows as it goes, becoming so tight I have to twist to keep my shoulders from scraping the walls. It tapers further, until a big man would not be able to pass at all, making the passage useless to Sharum. That's good news against pursuit, but I've always been broader in the arms and shoulders than other women, and my months in Sharaj and the maze have layered muscle over my natural span. At first, I am simply unable to move at speed, but soon the press of stone triggers a wrenching fear that tightens my stomach. If the tunnel constricts any more, I could get stuck. Even now, the passage is too tight for me to draw a full breath. I feel suffocated by it. Mika has no such problems. My sister moves with an efficient, skittering gait I am unable to replicate, and it is clear she is holding back to allow me to keep pace. Where are the others? I ask, trying to keep thoughts of getting stuck from taking over my mind. In a safe place, Mika says. We will join them soon. Release your breath. One last squeeze before the passage widens. The idea of releasing what little breath I have to squeeze yet further into a crushing tunnel terrifies me. But I trust my sister and obey, imagining my fear releasing with the air as I blow out my breath and contract my chest and shove myself into a space my body has no business fitting. I expect the walls to scrape against me, abrading my fine silks. But the stone is polished smooth from untold ages of use. Only my armlet grates against the stone, and I think it would be a fitting irony if that were what catches me fast. But then I pop through the choke point, and movement gets easier. The tunnel widens quickly after that.